Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
The Lifestyle Show.
Selina McKenzie.
Our brains are incredibly adept at repair.
For me, nobody sees.
We create our own realities.
A deep insight into mental health.
Yes, this is the Me Nobody Sees. We are back and it's great to be back. Now, if you've never heard the show before, we like to feel that it's important in this day and age that we share our stories and we try to break down the stigma of mental health problems. So we've got two lovely ladies in the studio with us, Michelle Mack and Sandra Evely. Welcome both.
Thank you for having us.
Hi.
And on the line, we've got a brand new psychotherapist whose name is Lindsay Hamilton. Are you there, Lindsay?
I'm here and it's lovely to be here.
Ah, wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. So today's subject is anxiety, although the show pretty much does sort of go at its own pace. We talk about other things as well, wherever the show takes us. But if you want to join in, then feel free by calling on 952 78 4000, WhatsApping 645 99 67 95, or emailing studio@tre.radio.
For Me Nobody Sees, a deep insight into mental health.
Great stuff. So, welcome to you both, ladies in the studio. Sandra, how are you feeling? You were on the show with us about 4 or 5 months ago.
Yes, I was.
You feeling okay?
I'm feeling okay now. As you know, after I was on the show, I started to recognise some of the things I was telling other people to look out for. I was experiencing again myself. So once again, I took myself to the doctor and explained and was put on medication, and I didn't start to improve. I then went back and had blood tests taken and asked if they could check my serotonin levels with the blood test. I wasn't sure whether they could or couldn't, and they could. And serotonin levels, evidently, I didn't know, should be between 40 and 200. And an average person is round about 150 to 175. And mine was 14, which was like running on empty, which was why I felt so poorly. And I was eventually put on 150 milligrams of serotonina, which was to boost my serotonin levels. And I get my results back next Monday. And by the way I'm feeling now is 200% different to how
wonderful
I was.
Yeah. I never knew that you could have your serotonin levels measured. Never knew that. Is that something, Lindsay, that everyone can have done if they want?
This isn't within my area of expertise because I'm a psychoanalytic psychotherapist, you know, rather than a psychologist. But it does sound very interesting and potentially very helpful.
It does, indeed it does. And how are you, Michelle?
I'm good, thanks. A little bit tired. I've been doing a lot of travelling lately.
You have, haven't you?
I have. I've been gallivanting about. And for anybody who has an anxiety disorder like I do, you'll know that brings with it lots of other different things and pressures. And but doing pretty well, thanks.
So if you know that you're going to be in an anxious situation like travelling, do you increase your tablets? How does it work?
Well, I'm not on medication.
You're not,
so
okay.
So I have different coping strategies that I use for things like that. And for me, it's about method and organisation and having a routine in place that means that I don't allow the anxiety to build to an extent where it takes over.
Right.
I do have pills that if I get very anxious, I can take one that will bring everything down slightly. Anti-anxiolytics, as I think they're called. But yes, it's more about having the mechanisms in place to cope with those situations, which I've done through many years of psychotherapy.
Yeah. My worry is I normally take 2 fluoxetine a day. That's what I normally take. But if I know that I'm going to be in a bit of an anxious situation, or if I start to feel a little bit wrong, I was going to say low, but low is not the right word for it, then I increase it to 3, and then eventually I come back down. But then when I'm on 3, if I then start to feel not right, I think, where else can I go? Because I can't presumably take any more than 3. I mean, there's nobody here now to answer this, but that is a worry, because where do you go from there?
Well, yeah. For me personally, I was very fortunate that the majority of my treatment wasn't medication-led. So I did mainly talk therapy, a combination of different talk therapies, with a small amount of medication. But the medication protocol was so light and only went on for a certain amount of time just to bring up the dopamine levels for me in my head, on my brain. And mine has been all about relearning, re-educating, and then putting those things into place, which for me works better. I'm not reliant on medication.
Yeah, that's good.
But not everybody is fortunate enough to be in that position, and some people need that little bit of help.
Yeah. And do you, as well as medication, do you use CBT or do you see anybody for counselling?
No, I'm not normally on medication. I've been on 150 milligrams. They started me off on 50, then we went to 100, and it wasn't until I had to see a psychiatrist to be allowed to be on 150. And that was like the miracle cure. Within 10 days, the difference, it was like someone had switched the switch. In fact, my children were saying, we need to get what mum's on to keep up with her. But normally not. And that's why I'm waiting to get my levels so that I can see if I can be weaned off again. But the things that make me anxious, I've had for years. And the way I cope with them is I don't deal with confrontation, even if it's on the television. So if I see in the morning on the news, perhaps on ITV, they're interviewing somebody and they're really rigorously interviewing them, I turn the sound down because it makes me feel uncomfortable. I might even turn the television off. It's that sort of anxiety. I don't like to see the confrontation. It makes me feel really unpleasant, but it's easy for me. I don't need coping mechanisms. I just need the switch on the TV.
Lindsay, can I come to you? Is that the right thing for Sandra to do? She's obviously recognising it and dealing with it.
So she's managing herself, isn't she? She's got excellent self-care. So she has her medication, which is she's finding really helpful, and also she's identified that she's not comfortable with even observing confrontation, so she's limiting her exposure to it.
Excellent. Now, I have had an email in. This came in because we've had to cancel a couple of shows. So this came in a while ago, but the person who wants to remain anonymous knows that we're going to be talking about it today. So again, I think one for you, Lindsay. This person emailed in and said, does anyone else suffer with social anxiety and anxiety? Lots of hands up in the studio. Do you feel like you are always in fear of dying? Every step you take is scary. There's so much stress all the time, even when you know you have nothing to fear. I'm not sure if this makes sense to anyone, but this is my life every day. That sounds awful. I mean, fear of dying.
That sounds a pretty acute case, in all fairness.
Yeah.
I don't have that fear. I mean, I think when I go back to when I was very, very sick at the beginning, before I received my diagnosis, I thought dying would actually be easier than living, which is often the case with most people. And it isn't until you start to realise that you can actually have a life, and there is a life outside of this world of anxiety that we live in. But yes, that sounds extremely acute.
Very sad. Lindsay, could you help this person? What would you suggest?
Well, perhaps predictably, given the difficulties, so it's the same person who has social anxiety and also this kind of chronic fear of dying.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I would imagine that talking therapy could be very useful, because you'd be wanting to look at, very much looking back to what kind of traumas this person might have experienced that have given rise to this social anxiety. I mean, we get such pleasure and kind of emotional regulation and enjoyment from social contact. So that becomes frightening to the extent that the person is perhaps isolating. Then, you know, we could work on that. And the fear of dying, that sounds, again, potentially very much linked to trauma. And, you know, that's what we would work on together in the psychotherapy.
If I know that you're quite a way away from us here on the Costa del Sol, do you do online sessions?
Yes.
You do?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Yes, I do. And so do quite a lot of other counsellors and psychotherapists. I'm obviously going to recommend psychoanalytic psychotherapy because we tend to work at a real depth. And so it doesn't become a revolving door type situation. It might take quite a while, and not everyone can afford it. But a lot of people do have reduced fees. So there's my plug there for a bit of psychoanalytic psychotherapy.
Right, OK. Thank you, Lindsay. I'm going to just read out a quote that Sandy in Mallorca sent to me, and then we need to go for our first ad break. It's a picture of a book. Printed it off, picture of a book. It says, don't give up because one of... Sorry, it says, don't give up because of one bad chapter in your life. Keep going, your story doesn't end here. Like that.
The Lifestyle Show, presented by Selena McKenzie.
This is The Lifestyle Show. It's just coming up to 20 past three, and you are with the Me Nobody Sees, with me, Selena McKenzie, our psychotherapist, Lindsay Hamilton, Sandra Evely, and Michelle Mack. Michelle, you have a question for Sandra.
I do. I was in the break, actually, and we decided to go with it on air. I was asking Sandra how they realised her serotonin levels were so low.
Good question.
Because obviously, you know, with generalised clinical depression, obviously we know that SSRIs are the standardised treatment, CBT and those sort of things. But I hadn't ever come across a situation like yours where somebody had said to me, oh, well, they knew my serotonin levels were really low.
Okay. I was going on holiday to see my daughter in Canada in May. No, the beginning of June, and in May was when I knew I wasn't well. And the doctor put me on 50 milligrams of the medication. While I was away, I just knew I wasn't getting better. I was getting to the point where if I was with a group of people, I was backing away from them. I'd go and look at a picture on the wall. Or
the social anxiety.
Yes, it was terrible. My girlfriend I was with, she was turned around to speak to me and find I'd gone missing. So when we got home, I said to her, this isn't right. So I went to the doctors and said to her, it's not working. She said, let me increase your medication. So I said, okay. So she said, you're needing your regular blood test for thyroid. So I said, okay. I said, just as an interest, I said, can you test for serotonin levels? And she said, yes, I'll put that on your prescription. So she did. And when it came back, that's when I found out it was 14.
Do they know why your serotonin levels were so
low? I asked the question. I went to see a psychiatrist because he was the only one to be able to move it up to 150. And I also saw a psychotherapist. And she said to me, my levels dropped because of me. So I said, what does that mean? And she said, it means that I was grieving. My husband died 6 years ago, and I didn't grieve at all at that time. He'd been dying of cancer for 9 years, and I was his carer. And when he died in Florida, all the family were coming over to see my new baby granddaughter, who had just been born. So we got her on the 11th of December and lost him on the 17th of January. So as everybody was arriving to see the new baby, they were coming on holiday, and so I wasn't able to
You weren't able to grieve.
Yeah, yeah. So we just went out and did all the holiday things in Florida, including my ex-husband coming over and going out and doing things in Florida. So by the time I'd come back, that period has sort of gone. And then my daughter came and moved in with me for 7 months. They gave up their home in Florida and they live with me and said, we're coming back to live here. And they live in Gibraltar now. And they stayed with me for 7 months. And again, we've got a new baby, a toddler, and all friends staying. There was no grieving. I never wanted anybody to see me sad. Mm-hmm. So I kept strong for the family. And then by that time, it was coming up to a year. And it didn't happen.
Fascinating. Grief is incredible because bereavement counselling as well is so important. I've got several friends who've been dealing with this over the last year, having lost very close either family members or partners. And it's not linear. There's no time frame to it.
No.
And it affects everybody so completely differently.
There was also another aspect. The will hadn't been changed with when he married me. We thought it had. And when he died, the will was still in his children's name.
So very stressful.
So I went from not only losing him, but losing my income as well.
Wow.
And that was very hard to cope with because we'd made preparations to make sure that I was covered and I wasn't. And that was completely out in shock. I mean, my home was my home. We'd done the prenup, But the other part I wasn't prepared for at all because as far as I was concerned, we'd got everything in place for that. And he was on very high morphine. And for 2 years, he was on 260 milligrams of morphine a day. So we found out afterwards he hadn't done the accounts for his business and he was a chartered accountant. So he wasn't functioning, but we all thought, he was. So
can I just ask Lindsay, could that be the source of Sandra's, the root of her anxiety?
Well, it does sound very likely, doesn't it? I mean, there may be things as well going further back, but when people come to me talking about anxiety levels, what I'd be wanting to explore is their inner kind of emotional state or state. And blocked grieving is incredibly difficult for people. Grieving goes through a number of stages. And one of them is anger. The second one is anger. Mm-hmm. First one is easy denial. And for a lot of people, that's really difficult. You know, how do you feel anger towards somebody who's died or left you or you've left, you know, when if a relationship's broken down? So to get sort of stuck in an emotional place of, in a way, a sort of denial of feeling is really uncomfortable, and we tend to do things, you know, our minds work in mysterious ways, and we can feel very, very anxious on a chronic basis if we can't tap into what's going on with us emotionally. So that's what, in a way, I usually hope to unlock within somebody their capacity to be much more tuned to how they're feeling.
Do you think you've grieved now, Sandra?
Yes. I mean, I went to the worst place ever with this time. I was suicidal. My family had to be on suicide watch and all sorts of things. I'd hear someone had been shot and I'd just say out loud, I wish that was me. I mean, if anybody had said to me, I would say that. I'd always say my grandkids and my kids would keep me strong, but there was no strength there at all. I didn't even want to get up and get myself a drink of water. I have completely gone down that rabbit hole past where Alice in Wonderland and the rabbit went. I had gone, but the tablets brought me back up again. But the main thing now is, because I'm aware, I'm looking, so once they take me off the medication, I have really got to work hard to be in that happy place and not let my body go in that direction again, because if it's down to me, I've got to work hard at this to keep it in the right place.
Do you think seeing somebody when you're off the medication, like Lindsay, to talk about it, to talk about somebody that's not family, so you're not upsetting anyone, to talk about the grief?
Well, I spoke to a psychotherapist and she just kept saying to me, just close the door on it.
Oh, no, I don't think that's right.
Can I butt in there slightly? Yeah. And I think Lindsay will agree with me on this. Having done many years of psychotherapy, really, therapy is amazing. It really is. But you have to have the right fit with a therapist. Mm. And if you don't, it can actually not be beneficial at all. So sometimes it's a bit of trial and error to try one or two different therapists or different types of therapies to see what works and fits for you. But I can't advocate it highly enough.
And what would you say, Lindsay, about, I mean, to me, that doesn't sound like the right thing that Sandra was told, close the door on it.
I wonder if that was possibly CBT. No psychoanalytic psychotherapist or even a humanistic, an integrative psychotherapist would ever say to somebody, just close the door on that, because that's really blocking, isn't it? And I'm really sorry to hear that.
Me too. That doesn't help people.
Yeah.
Hence, I didn't go back for a repeat performance, the third one. I thought, that is pointless for me.
Try a different one, because that's not right. See, Lindsay.
Yeah.
It is awful, and I don't think anybody should be told that. Michelle, I can't remember, so I know I should know, but your anxiety, does that stem from childhood or is it a recent thing?
So it does stem from childhood, but it never manifested itself until adulthood. And it really kicked in and blew up on me around about 16 years ago. And about 14 years ago, I was actually given my official diagnosis. But prior to that, I'd had various different episodes, which they'd either put down to postnatal depression, generalized anxiety, or general depression. You know, there wasn't... I'd never actually had a proper diagnosis until I wound up, I think it was about 13 years ago, with a full psychotic breakdown and no short-term memory loss after a very traumatic neurological episode. But my anxiety at that point manifested itself, and still does to a certain extent, when I get really bad, which is, thank goodness, very, very rarely these days, in actual physical illness. So I will physically present with symptoms of any number of different things, and the symptoms are 100% real, but they're triggered by the anxiety and stress in my brain.
There is a massive connection in the between the physiology and psychology as well.
Definitely.
I asked that because I was thinking about child anxiety, Lindsay, or ADHD. Is ADHD a form of child anxiety?
Well, ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, I think it's rather complicated, and when it's kind of labelled as a disorder, it can seem as though it's some kind of physiological state, when actually it's a psychological state. So, for example, children can feel very intense separation anxiety. And when they're feeling that, might manifest in various different ways, such as the inability to give attention to anything, you know, moving around a lot. They're trying to kind of defend against a real fear and a sense of perhaps loss. So actually looking below the surface and trying to understand what's causing this behaviour and these responses can be very useful.
Yeah, it's hard for children as well, I think, to make a parent understand or make an adult understand. If you're an adult, and we're talking how we are now, but how does a child articulate how they're feeling without the parents just thinking, oh, you know, you're just being naughty or whatever?
With great difficulty, actually. And to be honest with you, it's hard with children and children's disorders. Coming up within children, I've got two daughters, and you know, they all go through different phases. You just have to try and be as perceptive as you can and listen to what they're saying. Unfortunately, as adults and as parents, we are not very good always at listening to our children. We like to think we are, but we don't always hear exactly what they're saying. So my advice would be, listen to them, and children rarely aren't telling you the truth. Mm. They don't have that capability in them when they're younger. If they're telling you something like that, it generally means that that's what's going on with them.
Yeah. Would you agree with that, Lindsay?
I didn't quite catch whether Michelle said they aren't telling you the truth or they are telling you the truth.
Oh, they are, Lindsay, generally 90% of the time.
Yes, but what children do is they cover up a lot for one reason or another, and also sometimes they just don't know what's happening. So although they are truthful beings, sometimes they can't explain to us what's happening, and I think this is where the value of parental attunement lies. But you know, and when we're attuned, we notice this child's kind of hopping up and down on their feet. You know, what's going on with them? Usually they might sit quietly. Okay, so something's going on. Let's try and sort of find out what's happening here. I think that attunement, sometimes we try to be attuned, but, we're distracted. Something's going on. There's something to do with our work or something else happening. So we're kind of missing something. But children are also really good at coming back and drawing our attention to something over and over again. So,
yeah. It was many years ago when things were different, but when I was a child, I've only realised in the last few years that I had OCD. But I just thought I was mad, and my parents just couldn't cope with me because, you know, I had to keep turning things on and off, and I had to, and you know, what to do, because they didn't know back then. And it's only now, I've spoke to Mum and Dad and said, do you realise? I realise now I wasn't mad, and it wasn't your fault because you didn't understand, but I must have had OCD.
You see, I was very good at covering things, and I was very high-functioning for the vast proportion of my life. I was very high-achieving, high-functioning, and that covered a lot of my issues. And it wasn't until life changed for me and various things happened that they started to manifest and became more prevalent. But yes, we come from a generation, unfortunately, where, you know, my brother is ADHD, and he was the naughty boy in class.
Yeah.
You know, the class joker, because it was a different time. Things weren't discussed. We didn't know as much as we do now.
No.
You know, that it's just a sad nature. It's a shame.
I find it sad at Disney when you get a family walking around and the children are wearing shirts that say, I am naughty, I am ADHD. You know, on their
shirts. Weird?
Yeah.
That's wrong.
Yeah.
Wow.
I also don't like labels.
No.
It sounds really bizarre. One of the things that obviously most people who've got any sort of disorder find is when they get their diagnosis, it's like a light bulb moment. It's like, oh my God, that's why I'm like this. That's why I've been like that. And the relief is
absolutely
palpable. But also I've been very aware that, and I'm probably wrong for it, not talking as publicly as I should, that I don't want to be defined by a label. Because it is who I am, but it isn't who I am, if you know what I mean.
That was why when we started this show, which is probably about 9 months ago now, I decided to come out.
Yes, you did.
And tell everyone. I mean, bearing in mind, I'm not just telling my friends, I'm telling 500,000 people listening to the radio. But I was afraid that people at work would treat me differently, people in the street would treat me differently. You know, if I was having a bad day, oh my God, she's getting depressed. And it's not that. And to be fair, nobody has.
Actually, I think once you've done it, it takes a lot of guts to do it, but once you've done it, again, the relief is palpable, and you realise how supportive, and you also realise who your friends are, how supportive they are. I, as Selena will know, put a post out on social media this week, which was a repost of something I posted 6 years ago, but that post had taken me 7 years to realise, to have the confidence to be able to say out loud, this is me.
What it was.
And so many comments saying how brave you were, how proud people were of you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, amazing. But
yeah. It's a good thing. People are understanding far more now. We need to take another break, see what's happening with our sponsors, but we will be back because we've got a couple of WhatsApps to get through.
The Lifestyle Show, presented by Selena McKenzie.
We are back. It's the Me Nobody Sees, and we're joined by Sandra, Michelle and Lindsay on the phone. If you have any questions for our psychotherapist, this is how to get in touch.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on plus 34 645 99 67 95.
Couple of WhatsApps come in. I don't know if you can help with this one, Lindsay. Somebody who wants to remain anonymous. I am dealing with high anxiety and an extremely low level of confidence. I am a student in the UK and I don't know what to do. Heart goes out to this person.
Yeah, that just sounds really, really hard. I think without knowing a little more, it's difficult to know exactly what to suggest. But I hope that she's... this is a she, isn't it?
I honestly don't know. My God, I don't know.
Okay. I hope that he or she is talking to people, is talking to friends. And I think you said that there are students, and a lot of colleges and universities have counsellors and therapists in place. They also have student advisors and people like that. So, and talking to their GP. I mean, I have mixed feelings about somebody talking to their GP, because it depends on whether that GP is friendly to the idea of the talking cure. Certainly want this person to be given medication. They don't sound as though they're in that camp. But low confidence, anxiety, probably not very uncommon among students, especially those just starting out on a course. But talk to people, find support.
And maybe your peers, because maybe some other students are feeling the pressure too, and you can talk about it amongst yourselves. Maybe that'll help. Well, hopefully, and we'll definitely give Lindsay's details out after the show in case this person wants to have a chat. The next one, WhatsApp again, anonymous, which is fair enough. Hi guys, my girlfriend of 7 years and two kids has split with me. I think she loves me no more. Sorry, I'm reading this on the fly. I'm breaking. I have my kids 4 days on, 3 days off. But when I'm alone, I can't stop my thoughts. I'm a good guy and don't deserve this. I have been loved in a one-sided relationship for so long. I feel I'm going crazy. I'm struggling. I have no one to vent to. And I have suicidal thoughts. I hate things like this. Can we probably put this person in touch with you, Lindsay?
Absolutely. And if somebody is having suicidal thoughts, has had a relationship breakdown, is feeling terrible every day, you know, they're going to need some support through a grieving process, amongst other things. So talking to a professional sounds really important.
And a divorce is grieving, isn't it? It really is a grieving process. When you've been married, you are grieving the death of your marriage, I suppose.
Absolutely. And I also...
you carry on.
I also think it's very difficult. I think it's much harder for men.
Yes, I agree.
And I really want to put that out there, because it's much harder for a man to come forward and say that he's going through these things than women. Women have friendships with other women that are on a different level.
They chat.
So they do chat. And I do think it takes a lot of courage for a man to come forward with something like this. And they need, I think, often twice as much support as women get. They aren't heard as well.
Yeah. What would you say, Lindsay?
Well, I was thinking that separation and divorce, this is very different to a bereavement. It's very different to the loss of somebody through death.
Yes.
With somebody dying, it's such an intensely painful grieving process. I wouldn't for a second be listening. It's horrendous to go through. But when it ended, ended, and we hope that the person can move forward with their life. They're never going to forget the person. They're never going to feel not sad when they think about them occasionally and so on. But it's over. But with a separation or divorce and children, the parent is going to carry on seeing their former partner, probably regularly. And the person hasn't died, they've moved on to another life and possibly another partner. So actually, that grieving process is really complex and rather difficult in different ways.
Very painful. Yeah, very painful. And again, could counselling help?
Absolutely, of course.
I want to give out a helpline as well for everybody listening, not just the person that's messaged in, but there is a free, I'm assuming they're in Spain, a free Samaritan's helpline here in Spain, and it's in English for anyone feeling desperate, anxious, alone or suicidal. It's open 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. or after that you can email. The number is 900 525 100, so that's 900 525 100. If it's after the hours of 10 p.m. you can email pat@samaritansspain.com, and there's also a website, samaritansinspain.com. so please never ever feel alone.
Just going back briefly to your question from the student, there is also a UK Students Helpline if they want to look that number up. Which is for, as a free call, 116 123 for the UK or 116 123 for Ireland as well.
That's great. Thank you, Michelle. Hopefully our student is listening. We need to take one more ad break. I can't believe how fast this show is going, but we will be back on the other side.
The Lifestyle Show.
Selina McKenzie.
Okie dokie, we're in the last quarter of an hour of the Me Nobody Sees with Sandra, Michelle and Lindsay. I just wanted to finish off really on some terminology that seems to have come out recently, although Michelle's just told me that one of them's been around for a long time, but they seem to be buzzwords at the moment. So what is gaslighting, Michelle?
Gaslighting is when somebody is manipulating someone else using psychological methods to make the other person question their own sanity or powers of reasoning, generally.
Really?
Yes. So it's often used by narcissists or people with narcissistic personality disorders.
Wow.
And in toxic relationships, it's often very prevalent.
You must have obviously heard that before, Lindsay, probably for a while. It's new to me and Sandra.
I have come across it. Yes, I have. And there was a play, wasn't there, called Gaslight.
Indeed.
That I think came out in the 1940s, but continued to be popular on this theme. It's when the husband or wife undermines what the other person is saying and is saying, "You must be, if you think I'm being unfaithful to you, you must be crazy."
That's
so
terrible.
It's a real manipulative tactic.
I can see where narcissists would like to use that. So what about breadcrumbing? Does anyone know what breadcrumbing is?
Wow, that's
other
new
than
one
feeding
me.
The ducks. No.
Do you know, Lindsay?
No, it's that one's unfamiliar.
Here we go. Someone who breadcrumbs leads you on by dropping small morsels of interest, an occasional message, phone call, date plan or social media interaction. These happen sporadically and usually don't have any follow-through.
How interesting. Wow. How interesting. I do like things like that.
Avoid.
Yeah, avoid anyone with breadcrumbs. No Hansel and Gretel, please.
No breadcrumbs and no gas. We don't want any of that. Just going back slightly, Lindsay, on CBT, cognitive behavioural therapy, is that good for people with anxiety or does that work for other things better?
Well, I was going to say, actually, I was reflecting during the break that when we were talking to Sandra and her experience with psychotherapy, Michelle in particular was talking about finding someone with whom you're a good fit. It's so important. And you can speak to 2, 3, 4 people, have a little consultation with them to find out whether, you know, you can work well with them. And what I was going to say is that, you know, some people are going to be happy with a counsellor. Some people are going to be absolutely fine with a psychoanalytic psychotherapist. And some people are going to be happier with a cognitive behavioural therapist because they're not going into very much depth and it may be very short term. And what I've had is people who've been through this process And then they have wanted to do the deeper work and have the emotional exploration. And so it's been a good start for them to find out that they can trust a professional to work with them and listen to them and so on.
Okay, and am I right in thinking that CBT is just teaching you a different way of thinking about things?
Well, it tends to be along those lines, and as far as I understand it, sort of perhaps suggesting someone trying to think positively rather than negatively.
It tends to give people coping mechanisms in certain situations, and it's very good for certain disorders. But if you've got a very acute anxiety disorder, CBT will really only scratch the surface of being able to give you the tools that you need to actually live well. It is the go-to treatment in the UK mainly for talk therapies because it's all that is available. But there are so many others out there, and they really are definitely specific to each person's need. So CBT is a very good sort of all-round base for some things, but it actually isn't perfect for a lot of anxiety disorders.
I remember you said earlier about men. It's more difficult for men. We've only had one man, and I've been trying to get lots of men on this show. But our Simon, who came on with you, was very brave, and he came on and talked about his issues. And I think, I'm sure he said he had CBT.
He has had CBT.
His problem was he was the poor me syndrome. So, and this is how he described it. So if something happened, it'd be like, oh, it's down to me, it's down to me, when it might not have been anything else to do with him. So I think he was taught to think, it's not about you. Don't think that everything is because of you, sort of thing. So
I think the thing for
me,
you are. I think the thing for me with CBT is it does do certain things, but ultimately, when you've got an anxiety disorder, the most important thing is to get to the root cause of why you've got this disorder. And until you do that, you can't really rectify it. You're scratching at the surface. And that can only happen through either treatment with somebody like Lindsay or finding the right source of treatment for you.
Yeah.
That's just in my personal opinion.
Yeah, I think you're right. And Lindsay, what's EMDR? Do you ever use that?
This isn't something that I've really taken an interest in, and it's to do with eye movement, and it's used for severe trauma.
Right.
I'm not going to criticise it. I'm sure it's very useful for a number of people, but it's just, it's not really my thing. I'd rather do the emotional work with somebody.
Yeah.
It tends to be used a lot with people with PTSD, I gather.
Does it?
Yeah, it's tapping, as far as I'm aware.
And eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. But the tapping, I've heard of that, Well, sadly, we're almost at the end of another show. Lindsay, I know a lot of people will want your details. How can people get in touch with you?
They can contact me on lindsayhamiltonpaul@gmail.com. I think that's probably the best way. Do you want me to repeat that?
Yes, please.
Okay, so it's Lindsay, LINDSAY, Hamilton, and then the number 4, lindsayhamiltonpaul@gmail.com.
Great stuff, great stuff. And whereabouts are you based?
I'm actually based in the Sevilla region of Spain, in a small town called Osuna, but I do all my work online.
Great stuff, great stuff. That's wonderful. Sandra, thank you as always. You've been very brave, and it's lovely to see you smile. Let us know how you get on with the results next week.
I will do, Selena. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And the lovely Michelle Mack, thank you. Great as always.
Thank you very much.
This was the Me Yet Nobody Sees. We'll be back on the first Thursday of next month. Now, please don't go anywhere, because Hannah's coming up next between 4 and 6. We have a new person, old person stroke. Alan T is back tomorrow. He's taking over the Friday conversation at 2, so I won't be here tomorrow. I will be back on Sunday with your Sunday selection, so if you want any requests making for music, then do get in touch with me, selina@tre.radio. And on Monday's Lifestyle Show, I'll be talking about Alzheimer's with Natalie Baxter. She wants to help raise awareness after the death of her mother. At 10 past 3, I'll be chatting to Vicky McLeod about what's happening on Mallorca this month. And at 3:30, Carolyn Faulkner will be joining us to talk about The Signs in Love, an interactive cosmic roadmap to find love that lasts. All I want to say is that we're all survivors. Have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. You're the one who dreams.
Goodbye, sweetheart. Well, it's time to go. We're back tomorrow with another show.
Well, unless we're fired, we'll talk to you then. Goodbye, sweetheart. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this program, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels, and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.